people that you should be particularly aware of, because they can have huge effects on your relationships. When emotions take control away from you. The executive function called emotion regulation causes lots of trouble for adults with ADHD. Unfortunately, because it doesn't seem connected to more widely known symptoms like inattention and hyperactivity, you might not automatically associate emotional upheaval with the disorder. But adults with ADHD report that problems with managing anger, frustration, and hostility when provoked lead to lots of social conflict. Part of what society considers adult consists of controlling your temper, dealing quietly with frustration, shrugging off minor slights, and shielding others from your moods. So it's hardly surprising that many people will not tolerate emotional outbursts and will often end relationships because of them. When ADHD robs you of self-awareness. ADHD diminishes your ability to monitor your ongoing behavior. With hindsight, especially if you've been practicing using your mind's eye, you might be able to see that your emotions can be overwhelming, or at least uncomfortable for those in the firing line. You might recognize ruefully that some people have opted out of your life because they couldn't stand the heat. But those revelations don't automatically translate into different behavior at the moment when you're provoked. Sharpening your hindsight helps, but because emotions are so powerful, awareness might not be enough to stop the onslaught. Other methods for calming the arousal system in the body can help too. Our adult patients have often told us that they simply did not realize just how poorly they were coming across to others during social encounters. At least, not until it was too late. Some of the social violations they reported committing: dominating conversations with endless monologues or storytelling that went nowhere. Failing to listen closely for any length of time. Having trouble reciprocating or taking turns during conversations or social encounters. Making tactless comments. Failing to honor social etiquette appropriate to the situation. When ADHD blurs life's scripts. Social encounters with others require not just the normal give and take of conversations or other social actions. Adults have to do a higher level of self-monitoring to know when to start, shift, end, or keep an interaction going. Continuously playing the role of spectator over our own behavior as it plays out with others requires us to perform these steps in every encounter. 1. Read bodily and facial cues. 2. Perceive the emotional nuances in tone of voice. 3. Adjust our own behavior accordingly. You already know that deficits in executive functions make these steps particularly challenging for you. The ramifications? Every encounter with another person is filled with traps. These traps can exacerbate the problems you already face at work and school with coworkers, classmates, and other casual acquaintances. They become huge pitfalls in the relationships you want to last, including friendships, and particularly closer relationships, like intimate partnerships. Let's look at different types of relationships more closely. Intimate relationships, spouses and partners. The two individuals quoted at the beginning of this chapter poignantly related how ADHD can affect an adult's closest relationships. The balance of work can be askew when one member of a couple living together has a disorder that keeps that person from contributing his or her fair share. It's not hard to guess how much conflict this imbalance might create. ADHD can also cause misunderstandings and hurt feelings when one party appears not to understand or be interested in the other. If you can't control your own emotions, and seem not to perceive the nuances of your partner's emotions, intimacy is surely threatened. And in fact, our studies show that intimate relationships were problematic or dissatisfying in a number of ways, summed up here. Interestingly, we don't have any evidence that those who grow up with ADHD are more or less often married, separated, or divorced than other adults. That could be, however, because our follow-up studies have gone only as far as ages 20 to 30, ages at which 55 to 67% of all adults are still single. Our research and other studies have shown that adults with ADHD are more likely to have fair to poor dating relationships, 4 to 5 times more likely. Lower quality marital relationships. Our studies found more than a 2-fold difference. Extramarital affairs. Keeping ADHD from ruining your closest relationship. Unfortunately, to date, there have been no studies on any particular approach to addressing the problems ADHD can impose on dating and marriage. So I can't offer scientifically based advice. But here are some common sense ideas flowing from what research we do have. Get a diagnosis so you can get treatment if you haven't done so already. In working directly with adults, my colleagues and I have seen that medication, by improving symptoms, also improves the relationships between intimate partners. Read Gina Perra's book, Is It You, Me, or Adult ADD? This is the best book available right now for partners where one has adult ADHD. Although the book's advice is largely untested in research studies, it seems sound, given what science has revealed about ADHD in adults. Apply the strategies you learned about in Step 4. Many couples feel they can be themselves with the person they love. That may be true, but that should mean being your best self, someone who tries hard to think before acting or speaking. Keep track of what has been hurtful or helpful to the other person in the past. Remember significant dates, like birthdays and anniversaries, using the same kinds of external cues you use to remind yourself of doctor's appointments, work deadlines, and other obligations. Listen. Exercise tact, kindness, and courtesy. Do a fair share of household chores. Be a good parent if you have kids. Which leads us to parenting. Parenting is the most stressful role that many of us play in life. ADHD ups the ante in these ways, among others. Now it's doubly important to take care of yourself. A young child needs you to be there for him or her. Now you have someone else to think of first. A tall order when you have trouble resisting impulses to do what you want right now. Emotional control is more critical than ever since young kids inevitably try their parents' patience and also haven't developed the executive functions to control themselves. Kids can't express themselves clearly all the time, meaning it's your job to figure out what they need from you, what you should say, and when to stay silent, when to be firm, and when to yield. All of this requires the sophisticated give-and-take skills mentioned before. Now, add in the possibility that your child may also have ADHD. Research suggests that 30 to 54% of the children of adults with ADHD will have ADHD. Obviously, having ADHD will make it hard for your child to understand and follow your rules, to remember to do chores and homework, to control emotions when frustrated or tired, and to behave well at home and in public. Our own study found that the children of adults with ADHD were also more likely to be oppositional and defiant, even if they did not have ADHD. If ADHD is genetic, does that mean I shouldn't have children? Of course not. ADHD is not a deadly disease or severe developmental disability that could give your children an automatic death sentence or leave them in some lifelong vegetative state. Those are the things that might cause parents to avoid having children, if it could be predicted that they would occur. Having ADHD is not a life sentence of distress and failure either. Consider the odds for a moment. If your own ADHD was not the result of genetics, it doesn't run in your family, and your own case may have arisen from prenatal factors, such as premature birth, then your child's chances of having ADHD are the same as anyone else's, 5 to 7.5%. That is no reason not to have children. If it were, no one would procreate. Now, if your own adult ADHD is of the genetic type, it doesn't guarantee your child will have ADHD either. The chances will have gone up. Your offspring have a 20 to 50% chance of having the disorder. But that also means you have a 50 to 80% chance of having a child who does not have the disorder. When it's put that way, you can see that the chances are pretty decent you may not have a child with ADHD. Even if your children do have ADHD, it's the most treatable disorder in psychiatry, so it can be managed successfully, especially when identified and treated early. And having ADHD doesn't mean your child cannot have a long, productive, and happy life. When the disorder is managed properly, many children and adults with ADHD wind up having fulfilling lives and contribute to our society in useful and even important ways. Good parenting with ADHD. Get your ADHD evaluated and treated. You can't raise your children as well as you would wish to do if your own ADHD is making it hard to control your behavior. If you see the signs of ADHD in your child, or you have other concerns about the child's psychological development, have him or her evaluated and treated by a qualified mental health professional. Having an undiagnosed and untreated patient with ADHD raising an undiagnosed and untreated child with the disorder is a recipe for chronic conflict and other psychological disasters, to say nothing of the greater risk for accidental injury to the child. Several studies show that parents with ADHD are less likely to monitor their children's activities than other parents. Lack of monitoring is one of several factors that raise the risk of accidental injuries in those children. This may explain, in part, why children with ADHD have more injuries of all types than other kids, and that is because many of their parents have ADHD. ADHD can make parents pay less attention to their kids and reward them less. Try to set aside certain times to devote to your child. Use external cues to remind you of these appointments and of the rewards you want to give your child for the achievements and behavior all parents want to encourage. If it is after school, a weekend, summer vacation, or any other time when your children are home or in the yard, and you're responsible for supervising, set an external timer to frequent intervals, such as every 15 to 30 minutes, to remind you to stop what you're doing and monitor your children's activities and whereabouts. This is even more important if your children also have ADHD. Inconsistency is the bugaboo of parents with ADHD. You might be a harsh taskmaster one day and your child's fairy godmother the next. Or you might just react impulsively to every misbehavior with off-the-cuff comments, directives, commands, or reprimands. This is confusing to kids. Talk through the family rules with your child's other parent. Write them down. Then keep them posted, where you'll be reminded of them constantly while at home. Buy yourself time whenever you find yourself confronted by aggravating behavior from your child, so you can use the responses you've mutually decided on. Parents with ADHD also seem to be less adept at problem-solving when confronted with a child's behavior problems. Use all the arrows in your quiver to learn problem-solving. It will model a crucial skill for your child, while helping you avoid conflict in the moment. Take a behavioral parent training class at a nearby mental health clinic, medical school, university, hospital, or county mental health center. Most large metropolitan areas have such resources. If you live in a rural area lacking such services, or can't find a parenting class, consider reading our book, Your Defiant Child, Guilford Press, 1998, to learn more about methods that can be very helpful in raising a child with ADHD. For teens, see our book, Your Defiant Teen, Guilford Press, 2008. Parents with ADHD do not do well in these classes if their own ADHD is not being treated. So treat your own ADHD before starting one of these classes. Put yourself in timeout, a quiet room, if you're feeling overwhelmed or stressed by your child. Build in weekly respites from your kids. Find some hobby, club, organization, project, or recreational activity that you love, that renews you emotionally, that de-stresses you, or in other ways gives you time to recharge your parental batteries. Every parent needs some time away every week to regroup, but especially parents with ADHD. Smart dual parenting. These are the types of duties it may be best to delegate to the parent without ADHD. Handling school homework, especially if your ADHD is untreated. Most parents are not good tutors for their children, so you can bet that this would be true for one with ADHD. Doing all the childcare on alternating nights, so that no parent carries the burden of supervising and caring for the children throughout the day or after school. Taking turns like this is especially important when a child has ADHD. Handling time-sensitive events related to the children, such as medical and school appointments or deadlines for school projects. You can make up for it by taking on tasks that are not time-sensitive. Laundry, house cleaning, home and car maintenance, yard care, bathing the children, reading bedtime stories, etc. Driving the kids to their activities whenever possible, unless you are taking medication. Approving of major child disciplinary actions you want to take before you implement them. It's not that you should have no say, but discussing such moves with your partner can prevent poorly thought out and possibly excessive discipline. Friendships. Do you have a lot of friends? Old friends. Our extensive studies on adults with ADHD revealed significant problems with starting and keeping social relationships. Adults with ADHD generally say they have fewer close friends than others, though most said they had some friends. Almost invariably, friendships didn't last as long as for adults without ADHD. Adults with ADHD say they're periodically on the outs with people they consider friends, usually because they couldn't figure out how to resolve normal conflicts, or because they couldn't control their anger or other emotions. Sometimes this pattern ends in the adults becoming pretty isolated, even reclusive. Research has found that at least 50% and as many as 70% of children with ADHD had no close friends by the time they reached second or third grade. It didn't take weeks or years for other kids to start rejecting those with ADHD, but minutes to hours after the child with ADHD entered a new peer group, such as other children at a summer camp. Why is this childhood experience relevant to you? Because unless your ADHD has been treated, and you've invested effort into using strategies like those in Step 4, and developed the social skills usually blocked by ADHD, these difficulties with social relationships have probably followed you into adulthood, just like ADHD has. What to do about it? Follow all the advice for the other relationships in this chapter. And don't forget the all-important Rule 8 in Step 4. Demonstrate that you can laugh at yourself and that you're trying to overcome the social malaise that ADHD has inflicted. Many friendships are made and maintained on a foundation of honesty and humility. 28. Driving, health, and lifestyle risks. It's not just all the speeding and parking tickets I seem to have racked up in my life that explain why I've had my license suspended so many times, though God knows they're enough to explain some of those suspensions. It's also my extreme forgetfulness and this generally bad sense of timing I have. For instance, I neglected to pay a ticket for a citation I got saying my car was out of inspection. The policeman told me that if I forgot to pay it, my license would be suspended. So I get that notice, forget to pay it, and now I get arrested for driving on a suspended license. Then I get assigned to traffic school, but forgot to go on the right date. The problem is that this has happened 3 times over a single episode of not getting my car inspected. Then I got assigned to go back to traffic school, but I got the date wrong for the starting day, so I missed that class. The judge then orders me to take the next class, and to do some community service, too. Then I don't follow up with doing the community service the court required, and I am out driving anyway, and wind up being charged for driving on a suspended license again. The reason I got stopped, and they discovered my license was suspended, was, duh, my car inspection decal was out of date. So this is my 4th time the court has suspended my license for not paying the ticket for an uninspected car. Do I speed with my car? You bet. If I didn't, I couldn't concentrate on the driving part, 'cause I'd be fiddling with the radio and changing stations or text messaging one of my friends, or doing several things at once without paying much attention to my driving. So the speeding gets me excited, and I can focus better on the driving itself. How do you figure out whether something is risky? You look at the consequences, that is, what will happen in the future as a result. If you listen to this book in order, I'm sure you're way ahead of me here. Without a good sense of time, how likely are you to be a wise judge of risk? Not very. Onlookers in your life may have accused you over the years of indulging in risky behavior. By using the word indulge, they've been doing you an injustice. Indulge implies that you understand the risk and take it anyway. That's not the case. Rather, you have deficits in the executive functions that would help you assess risk. To put it simply, where risk is concerned, you usually don't see that there is any. As a result of this limited foresight and consequent poor risk assessment, plus all the other symptoms of ADHD, you and other adults with the condition have more driving problems, accidental injuries, health problems flowing from reduced concern for health-conscious behavior, early pregnancies, early parenthood, and sexually transmitted diseases. Research has documented all of these increased threats to your health, safety, and welfare. If you've had your share of car accidents and tickets, broken bones and burns, unplanned pregnancies, or regrettable one-night stands, and you'd like to feel and look healthier, isn't it time to work on avoiding bad risks and stop listening to others ranting about your indulgences? Driving safely. I'm starting the discussion of risk with driving because problems that occur when an adult with ADHD is behind the wheel are so common and so potentially deadly. My research, studies done by others, and even DMV records all show that adults with ADHD are more likely than other adults to have had their driver's license suspended or revoked, been cited for driving without a valid driver's license, crashed while driving, been at fault in such a crash, been cited for speeding and even reckless driving. Obviously, these are costly events, but you may not find them convincing enough to address your own driving problems. That's because, as others have said, statistics are people with their tears wiped away. So let me tell you a personal story that shows just how costly the driving problems of adults with ADHD can be. Much goes unsaid in this article, not the least of which is that Ron was my twin, fraternal or non-identical. Perhaps telling his story will make his tragic loss, and that of my family, serve some purpose by benefiting you or others you may know with ADHD. Fatal One-Car Accident in Keene, by Andrea von Valkenburg. Staff writer, Press Republican, Plattsburgh, New York. July 26, 2006. Keene. An Elizabethtown man died Monday night when his vehicle overturned after hitting an embankment. Ronald Barkley, 56, was traveling southbound on the Bartlett Road in Keene around 10:06 p.m. when he failed to negotiate a small bend in the road and veered off the shoulder of the right lane. according to Ray Brook-based state police. Barkley was ejected from the GMC Safari minivan during the crash and was pinned underneath as the car overturned. A passerby noticed the accident shortly after it occurred and contacted area officials. Within minutes, state police and volunteers from the Keene Fire Department responded to the accident, but Barkley was pronounced dead upon arrival. According to police, Barkley was traveling at an unsafe speed when the accident occurred. Investigators believe he was not wearing a seatbelt at the time of the accident. An autopsy was conducted at the Adirondack Medical Center Tuesday, which determined Barkley died of head trauma. No further information was available Tuesday night. My brother Ron had moderate to severe ADHD, dating back to early childhood, which continued throughout his life. A life that ended abruptly and violently on Monday evening, July 24th, in the summer of 2006. That fatal accident was attributable indirectly to his ADHD, and more directly to the condition's impact on the driving patterns and habits, speeding, risk-taking, distractibility while driving, use of alcohol, and rarely using a seatbelt, that conspired that fateful evening to prematurely end his life at age 56. The context of Ron's accident is worth noting. He was simply out for a pleasure drive along a rural dirt road on a fine summer evening, enjoying the beautiful scenery of the Adirondack Mountains, as he so often loved to do. He had finished working a 10-hour shift as a chef, and had a drink with our 92-year-old mother shortly before grabbing some dinner, and then departing on his pleasure drive in a used van he had just bought and proudly fixed up. Perhaps he had also had a few more drinks with his dinner before departing. We can only hazard a guess about that. But his death certificate cited intoxication as an extenuating factor in his crash and death. A few days earlier, we had spoken by phone, and he was the happiest I had heard him lately, owing to his new job and the fact that, after years of doing various odd jobs and mostly playing guitar and singing in rock bands, he was finally going to get fringe benefits. You see, Ron had quit high school at age 16 after his second attempt at 10th grade, which he was in the midst of failing again. He took up playing the guitar, and eventually became extremely proficient in rock and blues music. He would go on to be in countless bands over the next 40 years along the East Coast and in Southern California. Clearly he was a gifted musician, and many would listen in awe as he played. And he was the life of the party, always talking, cutting up and making jokes, doing silly things, or just being entertaining. But he had no head for business, a penchant for spending money beyond his means, and no time management skills. He was quick to anger, and was generally very impulsive, as well as prone to boredom in whatever job he currently held. So he drifted from band to band and, when not working in music, was likely to be working as a cook in restaurants to help make ends meet. He had two failed marriages, and many short-term cohabiting relationships with women. He had a long history of alcohol, tobacco, and especially cocaine abuse. He did a few stints in jail for drug possession or sale. He couldn't seem to stay at any job for long. Eventually, Ron fathered three children, but could never seem to provide the sustained care and support they required, and so wound up with child support payments, and often little or no custody of his children. More to the point here, Ron's driving record was pretty atrocious. Nearly every risk factor identified in research studies, mine and others, was present in Ron's driving history, and in his tragic accident and consequently untimely demise. It's a powerful irony not lost on me as an expert on both ADHD and its consequences for driving. More recent studies make it abundantly clear that irreparable harm can befall those with ADHD, and others, during this relatively mundane activity. Just as clear is the fact that those driving problems are responsive to medication treatments. Treatments my brother was always too reluctant or distracted to obtain, or sustained for very long. Problems with driving are found to be more frequent in different types of studies looking at both teens and adults, but especially in adults clinically diagnosed with ADHD. Those particular studies find that adults with ADHD, like my brother, have slower and more variable reaction times, make more impulsive errors, vary in their steering, are far more inattentive and distractible while driving than other adults, are less likely to wear a seatbelt or to keep their attention on the road instead of twiddling with the stereo controls or radio stations, text messaging, or talking on cell phones while driving, or just socializing too much with others in the vehicle, are more prone to road rage or driving-related anger and aggressive use of a motor vehicle when angered. These things were all true for my brother. The most common cause of car accidents is driver inattention. It's therefore easy to see why adults with ADHD are far more likely to have more severe crashes, as measured by dollar damages and people injured, drink alcohol and drive, be more impaired from that alcohol than others. All of these were involved in my brother's deadly accident. Even more telling than the fact that adults with ADHD have more driving incidents than others is how much more often they have them. Adults with ADHD are 2.5 times more likely than other adults to die prematurely from misadventures, like car accidents. An average of 3 times more license suspensions and revocations. 50% more crashes. Nearly 3 times more speeding tickets. More than twice as many accidents in which they were at fault. More than twice as many speeding tickets and total citations on their DMV records. Safety strategies. Fortunately, recent studies have shown that driving performance can be improved by the ADHD medications, stimulants, and atomoxetine, although the stimulants appear more effective here. Be diligent about this. If your ADHD is moderate to severe, be sure you're taking your ADHD medication whenever driving. Also take your medication if operating vehicles or heavy equipment is part of your work. What is also important here is to take your medication on a schedule that ensures you'll have adequate levels of medication in your bloodstream when you're most likely to be driving, such as morning and evening commuting, or late-night driving for work or social occasions. Earlier doses, even of extended-release compounds, may wear off too soon. Many adults take a booster of immediate-release medication later in the day to make sure they're covered. Your life and the lives of others on the road are at stake. If you're not taking medication, or there's a chance it is worn off, let someone else drive. Forget your pride. Let your spouse, friend, or other licensed driver get behind the wheel while you enjoy the scenery and fiddle with the music from the passenger seat. Always wear your seatbelt. You can put a sticky note on your dashboard, or better yet, over the ignition, to remind you to put it on before heading out. I don't want you to wind up like my brother, who was thrown from his van during a minor low-speed rollover and crushed by his own vehicle. Absolutely no alcohol should be consumed when you plan to operate a motor vehicle. Period. Stay off your cell phone, iPhone, BlackBerry, or personal data assistant while driving. This is becoming one of the most frequent sources of distraction while driving, contributing to your crash risk. And you, as an adult with ADHD, do not need more distractions. If you do need to use the phone or answer a call or email, get off the road. Then return the call, text message, or email. Never, ever, ever do this while you are driving. If you simply cannot resist using a cell phone while driving, buy the key to safe driving device, which will block your signals. It was invented by Professor Shui-Sheng Zhou at the University of Utah and is available now through Exendo LC in Kaysville, Utah. It costs around $50, but it's worth it. Your car key fits into this device like a knife edge folded into the handle of a switchblade. When you press a button to get the key to flip out, it transmits a Bluetooth signal that blocks your cell phone. So you cannot drive a car and talk on your phone. That could solve your cell phone or texting dependency, and that of other drivers in your family as well. Studies show that adults with ADHD already drive as if they are legally intoxicated, even if they had had no alcohol, are more adversely affected in their driving by even low doses of alcohol than drivers without ADHD. Avoiding injuries. ADHD can be a life-threatening disorder. You're not just at risk for car accidents, but for all kinds of accidental injuries. According to various studies, kids with ADHD are more likely to spend time in a hospital burn unit, to be involved in pedestrian auto or bicyclist auto accidents, to be poisoned, to break bones, to have head injuries, and to lose teeth than other kids. If you grew up with ADHD, the emergency room may have come to feel like your home away from home. In fact, the accidents that children with ADHD have tend to be more severe than those that other kids suffer too. And their mothers describe a lot more of them as accident-prone. What about today? As you may well know, these risks continue into adulthood. One recent study found that children with ADHD and other disruptive behavior problems were 3 times more likely to die before the age of 46 than children without these disorders, 3% versus 1%. My recent research and studies done by others have found that adults with ADHD are almost 50% more likely to have experienced a serious injury in their lifetimes, 4 times as likely to have had a serious accidental poisoning, more likely to file claims for workers' compensation than other adults. What can you do about it? Counteract your impulsiveness. Lack of impulse control may lead you to leap in and act without considering the risk of injury. One patient of mine told me that when he was a child, he and his friends pitched in to build a ramp out of snow that they could use to ride their sleds down a hill and then sail across a heavily traveled town road. But when the ramp was finished, he was the only one actually willing to try it. He wound up landing on a car with his sled rather than clearing the road and was seriously injured. Such stories are, unfortunately, more common in the life histories of adults with ADHD than in those without the disorder. Practice the Stop the Action strategies in Chapter 16. Take medication to reduce your distractibility and inattentiveness. Riding your bike on a busy road or crossing the street on foot, you're much less likely than other adults to pay attention to the traffic and avoid potential accidents. Also, practice self-talk and mental imagery to help you focus your attention before starting a potentially risky activity and while you're at it. While you're at the self-talk, ask yourself whether you're being childishly rebellious or grandiose when you refuse to take conventional safety measures. 65% or more of the kids who have ADHD are also defiant. If you were among them as a child, you may have a pretty firmly entrenched habit of ignoring other people's rules and may think you can get away with ignoring a risk. Know your physical limits. Children with ADHD may be more clumsy and less coordinated than others in their motor skills and development. Sometimes adults don't fully catch up. If you know you're not that coordinated, be humble. Follow Rule 8 and laugh at yourself. And then put on that bike helmet, buckle your seatbelt, or run on the sidewalk, not the street. Making sex a less risky business. There are only a few studies on the sexual activities of teens and adults with ADHD, 2 of which were done by my research team. We found that children with ADHD started having intercourse an average of 1 year earlier than other kids, had more partners, used contraception less, and ended up with nearly 10 times more teen pregnancies as either the father or the mother, and 4 times as many sexually transmitted diseases By age 27, 6 years later, the same group had become equal with the general population in contraception and sexually transmitted diseases. But those with ADHD were still having kids younger. What do we advise adults with ADHD to do? Well, there is absolutely no research on interventions that may work for these problems. But here are some obvious suggestions to try. Several studies by my friend and colleague, Eric J. Mash, Ph.D., and his students at the University of Calgary, Canada, found that pregnant women with ADHD were less likely to be married and less likely to have planned their pregnancies than women without ADHD. The mothers with ADHD were also more likely to be anxious and depressed, both before and after their children were born. Before birth, the mothers had less positive expectations about motherhood, and after birth, they had more difficulty with child-rearing. If you left school before finishing sex education classes, get educated. Every major bookstore has a section of books on sex and health. You'll even come across owner's manuals that tell you how to take care of your body that will contain chapters on sex. Use the internet. The point here is to inform yourself about sex, contraception, and related topics, so you can better manage your sex life. Unless you are planning on having a child, always use contraception. For women, this is easier because of birth control pills that can be taken daily. Both men and women have to remember to carry and use condoms, however, since the pill does not prevent sexually transmitted diseases. Unfortunately, this is just one more thing to be forgotten in the heat of the sexual moment. If you have a history of impulsive sexual activity that you've regretted, get your doctor to prescribe the morning-after pill, which can reduce the risk of conception after the fact. Or consider getting the Norplant subcutaneous form of birth control, which involves having a small device implanted just below the surface of skin on your upper arm, typically, that emits birth control medication over extended periods of time. If you're older and have had as many children as you want, a vasectomy for men or a tubal ligation for women is an option you can consider to alleviate the need to remember contraception. Still, however, you'll need to take adequate measures to avoid sexually transmitted diseases. Consider getting the human papillomavirus vaccination, which can now be given even to children. On average, people with ADHD have more sex partners across their active sexual life than do other people. Besides a family history of the disease, the single best predictor of which women will have cervical cancer is the number of sex partners. The vaccination can prevent infection by a virus that is known to increase cervical cancer risk. A vaccine is now available for men as well as women. Reducing health and lifestyle risks. As an adult with ADHD, you need to pay more attention to common health and lifestyle risks than most adults. ADHD makes you more vulnerable to substance use and dependence, including the legal substances caffeine, nicotine, and alcohol. More likely to be overweight due to less exercise, more sedentary activities like watching TV or playing video games, and a less healthy diet than other adults. Less likely to have preventive medical and dental care, and thus more likely to end up with undetected problems that become bigger problems. Studies show that half of all deaths in the United States are the result of lifestyle choices in areas such as tobacco use, 19%, diet and physical activity, 14%, alcohol use, 5%, firearm use, 2%, sexual behavior, 1%, driving, 1%, illicit drug use, 1%. Canadian research also found that 50% of all premature deaths could have been prevented through lifestyle changes across similar domains. These ADHD-related health and lifestyle habits put you at greater risk for coronary artery disease and cancer, among other medical and dental problems. Again, ADHD can literally be a life-threatening illness. The very nature of ADHD symptoms, particularly impaired inhibition and self-control, puts you at risk for a shorter lifespan. If you can't seriously consider the future consequences of your behavior, you're not going to be nearly concerned enough about health-conscious behavior, such as exercise, proper diet, and moderate use of caffeine, tobacco, and alcohol. Then there's conscientiousness, considered one of five major personality dimensions. To be conscientious is to tend toward the opposite of ADHD symptoms, to control impulses, think about the consequences of your actions, persist toward goals, and so forth. We now know that conscientiousness is linked to your risk for various health problems, and even to your life expectancy. Because you have ADHD symptoms in place of innate conscientiousness, you're going to need more assistance from medical and health professionals who are expert in the management of these health risks and lifestyle problem areas, in the form of smoking cessation programs, dietary management, exercise regimens, and so forth. Don't let ADHD shorten your life expectancy because of its association with these risk factors. Take whatever measures you can to, 1, control your ADHD, and 2, strive for a healthy lifestyle now. ADHD seems to take a higher toll over time. What can you do to start protecting your health and longevity today? People diagnosed with ADHD in adulthood were about as active physically as adults in the general population. But adults, age 27, who had had ADHD since childhood, were significantly less likely to get regular routine exercise, 44% versus 69% of the general population. If this pattern continues, these adults will be more prone to health problems stemming from lack of exercise later in life. Make an appointment for a physical with your doctor if it's been a while since you had one, or you've never had one as an adult. This is a status check to see what problems or issues are developing, and to try to head them off early with better preventive medical care. You avoid medical care at your own long-term risk. So don't play the odds thinking that because you feel well or have no obvious current medical problems, some are not festering unseen or undetected. Get a baseline physical and follow the advice your doctor may give you. If you smoke, ask your doctor to recommend a smoking cessation program to get you to stop. Drinking a lot? It's hard to be the judge of your own behavior, especially if you're in denial about the possibilities. But if someone else tells you the amount you're drinking is excessive, try to listen. Consider making a little check mark on a small piece of paper every time you have a drink, and then look at the pattern over a week. Is it more than you used to drink? Is it more than your family and friends drink? Do you get hangovers often, or just feel slow and sluggish in the mornings after drinking? Talk to your doctor, who is there to help, not judge. If you have a problem, ask your doctor to enroll you in a nearby alcohol rehabilitation program and Alcoholics Anonymous, AA group, or other such ongoing support program for recovering alcoholics. Ditto with drugs. Your doctor can help you enroll in a drug detox clinic or other local program. Be sure to see a dentist. Dental problems or diseases left unchecked could cause you to lose some or all of your teeth, require a partial or full set of dentures, lead to more extensive dental or gum surgery, or possibly even abscessed teeth, which have the potential to be lethal if that infection happens to enter your bloodstream and attack your heart. Start a plan of regular physical exercise each week. All of us struggle with this sound advice, but that's no excuse for any of us not to try to make this a more routine part of our lifestyle. There is also the added benefit that physical exercise done regularly helps people with ADHD manage their symptoms better and provides a great release for all that extra energy and hyperactivity. My patients and other adults with ADHD tell me that running, biking, swimming, other aerobic sports, And even martial arts have proven helpful to them in reducing their symptoms by channeling their energy into a more healthy outlet. Consider medication to treat your ADHD. Often, the medical and dental risks identified in our research on adults with ADHD stem from unmanaged ADHD and the disorganizing effects it has on their life. Getting your ADHD under control with medication can help you pursue preventive medicine and dentistry, as required for all adults. 29. Other mental and emotional problems. If you've been struggling for years with the symptoms of ADHD without knowing what's wrong, being diagnosed can be a huge relief. Not only do you finally have an explanation for your problems, you also have access to proven treatments that can alleviate your symptoms and put success within your reach. But what if medications and the self-help strategies described in this book aren't enough? What do you do if your days still seem awfully hard to get through? If you still can't get ahead at work, finish your education, enjoy your family and social life? If you still feel miserable and frustrated much of the time, what could be going on? Consider the possibility that ADHD is not the only mental or emotional condition you have. In Chapter 1, I said that 80% or more of adults with ADHD have at least one other psychiatric disorder. More than 50% have at least two other disorders. Earlier, I discussed the other conditions we often see along with ADHD. These are the most common culprits, listed roughly from most to least prevalent. Oppositional defiant disorder, conduct disorder, and antisocial personality disorder, substance use disorders, anxiety, depression. The rates at which these conditions have been found in adults with ADHD vary from study to study, so this order is not set in stone. But it will give you an idea of what might be ailing you when ADHD doesn't explain all the obstacles in the way of your having the life you want. Next, I'll give you a basic understanding of what these conditions look and feel like, and also how they are usually treated by a mental health professional. Of course, the only way to be sure that you have any of these disorders is to get a thorough evaluation and diagnosis. If you've already been diagnosed with ADHD, why wouldn't the evaluator have noticed anything else that was wrong, too? In an ideal world, your evaluation for ADHD would have uncovered any other conditions you have. But on this imperfect planet, a lot of factors could have kept other conditions from revealing themselves. Maybe you and the evaluator were so fixed on the idea of ADHD that you downplayed other symptoms that lurked in the background of your history. Maybe these other conditions were so mild at the time that they really didn't qualify for a diagnosis. It's always possible that the diagnosing practitioner was inexperienced, in general, or in identifying psychiatric disorders other than ADHD. It could even be that your doctor saw the signs of other problems, but believed it would be best to have you focus on ADHD and get that under control, before being asked both to accept that you have other conditions on top of it, and to participate in managing them. Call your doctor, ideally the same one who diagnosed you with ADHD, and ask for a consultation. Be prepared to describe the symptoms you're experiencing, the impairments that seem to be left over from your ADHD treatment, and the areas of life in which you're struggling. The following will help you help the practitioner by zeroing in on what's wrong. Do you often feel mad at the world? Is losing your temper a regular, probably daily occurrence? Do you think people view you as a maverick, a rule breaker, a rebel? Do you tend to defend yourself relentlessly when someone says you've done something wrong? Have many of the jobs you've left ended because you were fired? Oppositional defiant disorder. The more yes answers you gave, the more likely it is that you could have oppositional defiant disorder. If what's making you miserable Despite an improvement in your ADHD symptoms, thanks to medication, he's feeling like a misfit. Always the bad boy. Misunderstood and disliked. Hemmed in and pushed around. Oppositional defiant disorder, ODD, may be the cause. If you remember feeling hostile and stubborn as a child, behaving in ways that adults defined as defiant, and that always seemed to get you in trouble, you could have had ODD then, even if it wasn't diagnosed. Among kids who did have these symptoms, the disorder persists into adulthood in fully half. What causes it? We're not sure. It could be that a pattern of rebelliousness sets in when children with ADHD are constantly at odds with the adults trying to make them behave in ways that their deficient executive functions prohibit. By the time kids have had ADHD symptoms for 2 or 3 years, 45% to 84% of them have ODD, too. But it also could be that the emotion regulation problems presented by ADHD create a major predisposition to problems with managing anger and frustration. Certainly, the impulsive emotion associated with ADHD leads to a greater quickness to anger, impatience, and low frustration tolerance, which can be the initial spark to the fires of ODD. Venting and acting out with others leads to lots of conflict, especially with authority figures. Maybe that's why adults with ODD are more likely to get fired, even though poor work performance ratings are more often traceable to ADHD. Did you get in trouble with the law as a child or teen? Run away from home? Get caught for truancy or curfew violations? How about now? Do you have a criminal record? Do you push the envelope on laws, community ordinances, rules and regulations? Have you been kicked out of the house? Have a history of alcohol and/or drug abuse? Do you get involved in bar fights? Have you ever been accused of sexual harassment or assault? Treatment. In many cases, the medication used to treat ADHD also improves ODD. By facilitating emotional control and other types of self-control that help you fit into society more comfortably, the medication you're already taking may diminish the ODD symptoms over time. If the ADHD medications have not completely managed your impulsive emotions, consider enrolling in an anger management course with a mental health professional, nearby mental health clinic, or community college. Or try the self-help methods in W. Robert Ney's Taking Charge of Anger, Guilford Press, 2004, mentioned earlier. Also, some adults require a second medication just to manage this aspect of their problems beyond the medications traditionally used to treat ADHD. Ask your doctor about them. Conduct disorder and antisocial personality disorder. Many who answered yes to a lot of the questions before wouldn't even be listening to this book. But to those who are, if you have a history of criminal or near-criminal behavior, you may still be struggling, despite treating your ADHD, because you've become somewhat marginalized in society. It could take time and professional counseling to get you back into the mainstream. You could think of conduct disorder, CD, as a step up or down from ODD. Kids and teens who have CD aren't just defiant. They lie, steal, fight, carry weapons, set fires, and commit sexual assault, generally violating the rights of others and social norms and laws. While the great majority of adults with ADHD don't qualify for this diagnosis, 17% to 35% can remember fitting this profile closely enough to have qualified for the diagnosis when younger. Those who still fit this picture as adults, anywhere from 7% to 44% of those who still have ADHD, with my own follow-up study revealing the higher number, would be diagnosed currently with antisocial personality disorder, ASPD, which is essentially CD grown up. How does someone develop such severe behavior problems? partly as a result of the problems with inhibition and self-regulation that go with ADHD. But those symptoms can't explain everything, since most people with ADHD don't end up with CD or ASPD, too. More likely, it's ADHD combined with genetic